Hello everyone, from Glenmont Partners from Nuveen, this is Glenmont Insight. Here we discuss all things energy transition, from policy to technology. With assets in multiple geographies and over 5 billion assets under management, Glenmont Partners is one of Europe's largest fund managers focusing exclusively on investment in clean energy infrastructure. To find out more about us, visit www.glenmont.com. Don't forget the double N. Welcome to episode 8 of Glenmont Insight. I'm your host, Francesco Cacciabue, co-founder and CFO at Glenmont Partners from Nuveen. And today we are exploring the fascinating intersection of nuclear energy market. Currently, Glenmont is not investing in nuclear generation. However, in the recent years, we have seen a growing interest around this low carbon technology, also at the recent COP in Dubai. Joining us is Stefano Buono, a fellow Italian and CEO of Nucleo, a small modular reactor company. Stefano, could you start by sharing a bit about your past and journey in this sector?
Yes, with pleasure. Welcome everyone. So I'm a physicist, actually, and in the 90s I was working at the European Center for Nuclear Research. In those years, the Director General at the time, that is also a Nobel laureate in physics, Carlo Rubbia, and another fellow Italian, he had an idea to make very, very safe reactors. And in the 90s, people was very concerned about the safety of reactors. But the idea was so fascinating that I started to work with him. So I dropped my plans and I started to work with him. We worked together many years and we actually discovered the technology that is the one of, that is used today in nuclear, which is the use of lead as a coolant. The technology was the right one. We were able to build a reactor that was actually very, very safe, intrinsically safe, and also quite cheap. But it was not the right time to develop reactors. So in 2002, I took a patent of this lead technology that had an application in nuclear medicine. And I founded a company that had a very beautiful path, because it became the biggest company in the world doing nuclear medicine. And when we registered our first drug for the treatment of neuroendocrine tumors, the company was listed on NASDAQ and Novartis made an offer to acquire the company for almost $4 billion. That made me very happy, not only because the company was successful and all of my investors were so happy, but also because I could come back into the nuclear business. And actually that happened in 2018, and I started to plan how to come back into the idea of producing energy. But I still waited 2 or 3 years before coming back and launch a new company, because I understood in 2021 that the time was really the right one to invest and to launch a new company. So we founded the company in 2021, a little bit more now than 2 years ago, essentially. The company was funded with a significant amount of money because we raised $400 million essentially during the first year of the company. So we positioned ourselves immediately as the most funded company in Europe and one of the biggest in the world to develop new reactors. So that's my background. But also between the sale of Novartis and the founding of the company, I also made an investment. I founded my own family office. I made a 26 investment on my own, but we also invested in, I also created a holding investment company that is co-invested with many friends and some institutions in Italy. We are investing in innovation and technology. We did already 51 investment in venture capital. So I'm also an investor and very attracted by technology overall.
Oh, congratulations, Stefano. After selling my company for $4 billion, I would have considered retiring immediately. Your continued dedication suggests a remarkable passion and commitment to making a positive impact.
Well, yeah, I knew that when I saw the company, I was young enough to get into the new venture of energy. So I asked permission to my wife to do it. Because I said, you know, you're going to see me even less than what we were working together. She's in nuclear medicine physician. So she was the medical director of the company. So we were working together. It was okay. But now is we have taken different paths because this is more on the energy field. It's not medicine and biotech, even if it was nuclear medicine.
Yeah. In one way, it's good not to work together with your wife, I guess. Okay. You've mentioned a bit about this new nuclear technology. But before we move into that, I understand you're about to fly to Davos for the World Economic Forum. What do you expect to discuss and potentially achieve at this forum this year?
Well, you know, the first time I went to the forum was 2 years ago, and I was the first person to ever talk of nuclear at the forum, only 2 years ago. So I have still the same objective in mind, that is to make people understand, not only to a smaller community of stakeholders, but to a larger community, the benefit that nuclear energy plays into the reaching net zero. And I think it will be the main argument that we'll be discussing together today. So it's very important that I also dedicate a lot of time also to this, because it happened that I have the chance to have been working on the next generation technology in nuclear, and at the same time being an entrepreneur. And from this, and also I've even founded one of the biggest startup in the nuclear field. So I'm in a very privileged position. I think I have to leverage on the know-how that I'm accumulating and share my vision. And that's the reason also why we are discussing together.
Indeed. I've heard that you have close ties with prominent political figures, particularly in France, where the nuclear sector holds significant importance. It seems that they are eager to collaborate with you on your project.
Yes, because essentially the technology is very close to France, because we want to close the fuel cycle, meaning that we want to use the nuclear waste of the older generation of nuclear and to make it the fuel for our reactors. And this is something that France wanted to do in the past, already in the 70s, when they launched Phoenix, Super Phoenix, and the so-called fast reactor technology. The problem was that they chose another liquid metal, sodium, to make the technology possible. But sodium has a chemical risk. It gets fires with air and explodes with water. So to control the chemical risk, you have to use a lot of safety system. The consequence of that is that the reactors are very expensive. So this technology that was very sustainable from the environmental point of view, because you make a much better use of the fuel, was too expensive. It was already like 60% more expensive than the PWR that are present in France. So the technology failed essentially from economical reason. So the possibility of using lead opened back this idea to close the fuel cycle. Maybe I can tell you why it's so important in a second. But so at a very cheap price, because the energy system that we build, the reactor that we build, the cost is 1/4, 25% of the original cost of Superphénix that was our reference in the 90s. So thanks to the avoiding this chemical risk of sodium, but also implementing a know-how that has been developed over tens of years, it is possible today actually to make a very cheap reactor. And just one last word about the technology. Nuclear is very attractive, because 1 gigawatt electric in 1 year, that is the consumption of a city like Rome, can produce only less than a cubic meter of waste. And this is a waste that after 250 years is not even radioactive anymore. And this is the beauty of nuclear. The fact that the energy is so concentrated that the impact on the environment can be very, very low. But this is only possible if you recycle the fuel, because reason that there's no need to get too much into detail now. You need to do this recycling of the nuclear waste. France still has a huge know-how, so we decided to create the company also in France, have a big subsidiary in France, to leverage on this technology. Hopefully, France, with President Macron, decided only a bit more than almost 2 years ago to relaunch the nuclear industry. So it has been a fortunate coincidence that we had the right technology that could serve and give value to the experience and the technology of France. So we became one of the companies in France that are the most promising because we won a competition in France, and we have now significant support from the government and from France to do our first reactor, but also our first fuel factory.
The concept of closing the nuclear cycle is intriguing. Just to clarify for our listener, Nucleus technology utilizes nuclear waste from existing reactor as a fuel.
Yes.
Essentially closing the nuclear cycle and eliminating additional nuclear waste. Is that correct?
Exactly, because in the normal fuel cycle of these current reactors, you only use 0.5% of the energy of uranium. So we can reuse virtually 200 times the same amount of uranium that has been extracted. And since nuclear is operating 10% of the electricity production of the world in now, a lot of uranium has been extracted. So virtually, we can operate for hundreds of thousands of years without extracting any more uranium from the ground. So there is a huge amount of uranium that has been already extracted. There is a cost associated with the recycling, but this should compensate, of course, now the increasing cost of uranium. At least technology makes a lot of sense. Not all the technology can, of course, reuse so much the reactors, but our technology is enabling, again, this possibility.
This is indeed impressive, especially considering the challenges associated with storing radioactive waste. Your solution seems particularly valuable, especially when compared to temporary storage utilized by many countries now.
Yes, the solution exists, but they are expensive. Finland took the decision to make the geological repository. But it's true that otherwise governments and the reactor owner, they keep the fuel in temporary storage because they're still looking for the right decision to take. We are happy because we want to reuse this fuel. So it is not a negative aspect that this fuel has not been reconditioned or put it underground. We want to avoid the very need of a geological repository. So we really want to take out one of the three concerns of people that is against nuclear. One is the waste, of course, what we are discussing. The other one being the cost. And the first one being, of course, the safety.
Stefano, your technology seems to address the trilemma of nuclear energy. Regarding the cost of nuclear, I recall the UK government awarded a generous tariff of £92.5 per megawatt hours in 2012 money in the now in the construction nuclear power plant Hinkley Point C. Can you provide your perspective on the levelized cost of electricity for small modular reactors?
Yeah.
And how you plan to achieve it?
Well, the price that has been negotiated by Hinkley Point C, this reactor in UK, was the very reason why we want to deploy a fleet in the UK, because we would be so happy in receiving such a fixed price for our reactors. Because with respect to the cost of a big reactor like the one that you mentioned, we think we can achieve a cost already on the installation that is half of it. So the cost of this, let's call it a big reactor of the past, is quite high. It is more than 8 pound per watt installed. Our goal is to have a cost of 4 euros per watt installed. So you see the difference. And there is another very important difference when you, and the reason why small modular reactors are becoming so popular is the cost of capital. Because in the past, you have seen this big project last an average of 9 years in the world. But you have seen from 6 to 18. So a very wide range. And if a 30 billion big project blocks the money for such a long time, the cost of capital becomes enormous, of course. So that's the idea why at the beginning of the industry, the tendency was to create bigger powers because to be competitive. While today, there is another way to approach the problem that is, let's make a small enough that one can build every component into industry, into the supply chain, and build this reactor very fast, so that when an utility wants to build the reactors, possibly the construction would take only 3 to 4 years. So the capital will be, cost will be smaller because there is first less money engaged, so you can have many different way to invest into nuclear, so also private money. And then, of course, give a return on investment faster because this capital is blocked for less than. We are building reactors that has a power of 200 megawatt electric, and the cost of reactor are we hope to be less than 800 million euros. So one thing is try to find 800 million euros to build a reactor in 3 years. Another thing is to find 30 billions to build a reactor in 10 years. Even if then you produce a lot of electricity and the return on investment cannot be so fast. So that's the key, a little bit of the idea to go smaller enough to be able to be faster and more effective. This is the first.
Assuming 800 million investment for 200 megawatt installed capacity, what do you anticipate the cost per megawatt hour to be?
Yeah.
This includes obviously factors such as fuel costs, maintenance, etc.
You know, we are working on in our hypothesis in a range between 50 and 70 euros per megawatt hour. This is our assumption by taking into account the complete cost of an installation, that is also the dismantling and the disposal of all the waste. It is a little bit difficult today to compare costs because I never really looked at a reasonable, the same assumption when you go to LCOE, because many people don't consider it the end of the cycle of for example, of an installation when you consider the LCOE, etc.
You mean the commission?
So it's a little bit. Yes, it is a bit complicated to compare at the moment. We have to find a way to use the same assumption to calculate the LCOE so that there are comparable costs. So I prefer not to try to talk about cost. The installation cost is very, is much easier to compare because these are, steel, material, engineering. Is very difficult to get it wrong. On the LCOE is a little bit more complicated because things are changing so much. But also, one thing is the cost, and one thing is the price that people pay. So, you have to understand that the quality of the electricity of a reactor is very different from the quality of the electricity of solar and wind, because this is available everywhere, irrespective of the weather conditions, but also is available 24/7. So today we are experiencing, of course, with the growing of the renewable, the fact that the energy price varies during the day. And of course, having the possibility of selling electricity where there is a peak in the price is much more valuable than selling electricity when there is a huge competition. No? Virtually, if you have you know, a country that has only solar, the price of the electricity can be almost zero at midday and almost infinite at midnight if you don't have the storage. And the storage is another element that is not taken properly into account when you consider the price, the final price to the user with respect to the... So the moment you sell the electricity is very important, the value of the... That's why it's so complicated to compare costs, because there is also the value of your electricity difference very much according to when you provide it.
You make a valid point about the efficiency of nuclear energy, especially when compared to renewable sources that have intermittent operating hours. It is a crucial consideration.
Yeah, and you know, because we are in the grids of the future that are full of renewables, we are also adapting the balance of plant of our reactor in a way that we can modulate the delivery of electricity during the day itself. So, for example, in our design, we will be delivering 300 megawatt electric at certain hours and 100 megawatt electric in others. So we can modulate during the day very easily with a small storage, I would say, but it's very easy storage to achieve with heat, with a reactor. Will be more adapted to the necessity of the grid. And this is something that, of course, a bigger reactor of the past cannot even think about, because you need hours and hours to before you switch off a reactor. I mean, especially to switch it on. And you didn't build this reactor with a modulation of your electricity during the day. So it's...
Future-proving the technology is a well-thought aspect. Maybe just a final point about the technology. Apart from the reactor, then you will have an enormous steam turbine generating electricity. And this will be a more traditional part of the power plants, right?
Yes, it's very traditional, apart the possibility of adding some storage in order to modulate the energy, because we also have to act a little bit like grid regulators as well. So we have to do it... if we want to take the space that should be left by fossil fuels, gas and carbon, especially for gas, we have to take also the duty that they offer to regulate the grid, of course, regulating the need of the grid during the day. So this is a very important element that we have to achieve. So the balance of plant is a little bit innovative in that respect. But of course, with steam, you cannot reach those efficiency that you can reach with, high temperature, with the modern gas, system. But the use of residual heat can give you other opportunities. So you can actually, of course... your reactor not only to produce electricity but other things. For example, 2 days ago we announced a partnership with an Italian industry, Mer Tecnimont, to develop hydrogen production using our reactors in an integrated plant. So if you use electrolyzers combined with high temperature heat, of course you create a more efficient production of hydrogen, for example, or sustainable fuels. You avoid also certain costs because you have electricity production immediately on the on the plant. You can reduce also the cost in the engineering of the plant, even the nuclear part itself, and so on. So there are a lot of different way of thinking that you can address when you think about small modular reactors. It opens all of a new world. That's the power, I would say, of the next generation of nuclear. And this is possible because also some of the modern design of nuclear reactors are intrinsically safe, meaning that you eliminate the possibility of a core meltdown and those accidents of the past that has added a little bit the nuclear of the past. So you can do it by design. You can today build on the 80 years of experience of nuclear and make a design that of a reactor that switch off by itself, by nature, by the physical laws. You don't need not even human intervention without damaging the reactor. So a temperature and condition that don't damage the reactor anymore. That is a passive safety, intrinsic safety, and is a modern approach to nuclear management that we implement. It has been our obsession for the past 30 years to create a passively safe machine. And but I think it's also some other new technology are also pushing this this road, which is very important. And when you have these, then you don't have the nuclear accident, you don't have evacuation plan, safety distance from your plant to the population. You can go into the industrial district and serve closer the industry with combined production of not only electricity, but also other useful things that are needed to the industry, that is heat, high temperature heat.
Interesting. So via this passive safety system, the reactor automatically stops, avoiding incidents like Chernobyl.
Yes. If there is a malfunctioning or even a sabotage. So even if you try to provoke an accident, the machine is not made to be able to have an accident because they switch off by itself. That's the idea. Which is very feasible. It's not science fiction. It is. There are a few designs that implement this complete passive safety into their design, and this is this generation of nuclear is possibly more the fourth generation. So you heard about the third and fourth generation, and one, or these kind of reactors are also called advanced nuclear reactors. So the small reactors sometimes are called advanced modular reactor when you want to put the accent on the fact that they belong to the fourth generation that are implementing novelties.
Maybe the last question, safety, Stefano. I guess you are working with the regulator in order to receive all the relevant licenses so that your modular reactors can be installed near cities, industrial districts, etc.
Yes, of course. We are already licensing our reactors. So we are engaged with the French regulator and discussed about precisely about this argument that is very easy to put into the design when we use the coolant that we choose, that is this liquid lead. So for us was very important. And the first interaction with the regulators are very positive. So they're very keen to go toward a process that allows us to license a reactor that is considered passively safe. So there is also a very good attitude of the French authorities. And in June, we also start the licensing of our first commercial reactor, because the first interaction we're having is on our first of a kind. But we are also in parallel starting the commercial reactor design, and this will be done also in parallel in Slovakia and UK and in other European countries, not only in France.
Yeah, actually, this is a good place for my next question. that is about lead time. It sounds that small modular reactors are ticking a lot of boxes, but how long is it going to take before small nuclear reactor can be installed at scale?
The licensing of the first machine is, of course, the very tricky part. We have established a program very precise because we are a sizable company. Of course, we are 600 people now, 1,000 next year. We have all these people is very experienced people. So we are getting together a lot of know-how, nuclear know-how in Europe. So our plans are to have our first operational reactor in 31, and to have our first commercial reactor in 33. Our first commercial reactor is the first of many. So I would say that the commercial deployment should start in 2033, essentially for us. But to have a commercial deployment, we have to build a lot on this licensing part and to be ready to be it for deployment for that date. So there is a timing investment to do in the technology, just because we have chosen innovations to be able to have a cheaper, safer, and more sustainable nuclear. That's important. But once we have the design, once we have the reactors, then it's the modular part must enter into action. Yes, we have to build a supply chain as well. But when this is on board, the deployment can be much faster. Of a fleet can be much faster. That's the name of the game. To be modular.
Is 2033 not too late for the net zero target we aim to achieve by 2050?
Well, it's never too late. We needed this technology. We needed, yes, maybe even 50 years ago, unfortunately, the bad narrative around nuclear, because nuclear essentially was born to make bombs, not to make energy. So everything has been hunted from the very beginning. If nuclear technology would have started in outside of a Cold War, it would have been a very different technology, and the success would have been much better. That's my belief.
So, it is interesting you mentioned Oppenheimer. It's a quite telling story.
And it's fun because, Fermi was part of this project. In the movie Oppenheimer, you see that there are four groups that speaks independently. One group was led by our Italian Nobel laureate, Enrico Fermi. And in 42, so more than 18 years ago, he created the first fission chain reaction that was useful to make electricity at the time. So while Oppenheimer was more focused on making the bomb, he was really focused on understanding the physics and also possible civil use of nuclear energy.
Safety aside, what are the environmental aspects of your reactors? Obviously, nuclear is a low-carbon technology. How do you assess the green credential of a small modular reactor?
Well, this is a very interesting question because our objective is to not even needing a green credential, in the sense that I think that a true success of a technology is when it becomes also competitive to the market. So we have a huge ambition. And I think that to understand the competitiveness of nuclear, you have to understand, and people and the governments have to understand the full cost of electricity. The full cost of electricity is also given by the cost of the grid. So today, again, another cost of renewables, which is not considered, is the investment that governments have to put on the grids to them more modern, but also to have more connection because a distributed energy system Sometimes unbalanced, like it happened in Italy, in which all the energy is done in the south, the renewable, but all the need are in the north, generates a lot of cost. So I think our effort is to understand that nuclear is a technology that is needed together with many other technologies. And the goal would be to understand how to distribute this technology, a global strategy of deployment of electricity production. That's the key, I think. And then maybe in this, when there is this understanding that is not, is never been done, honestly, it's never been done. When you have this understanding, then you have to decide if there is a technology that needs some green bonds to be able to support it, because it's essential to reduce the overall cost of the electricity production of a nation, of a region, or not. That's a little bit my view. So we are trying to make a very competitive nuclear with respect to gas, depending on the price of gas, of course.
Sure.
We would never be, you know, in the 90s, we couldn't be competitive because oil was, the cost of oil was $10 per barrel, $10, $12 per barrel when I first started to develop our reactors. So there is no way to be competitive. Of course, then nuclear became again interested because of the zero carbon emission possibility of nuclear.
Net zero cap.
So thanks to that, it's important. But for the long term, it's very important to understand more about the role of nuclear. And I believe it's much more important than what we think. Because I believe, you know, nuclear energy is 1 million times more concentrated than any chemical energy. That meaning with very small installation, but also small resources, you can obtain the same amount of energy, but also smaller waste. So at the end, when we will put together in a reasonable way all this system, I hope we will possibly understand that the benefit of nuclear will be as essential as all of the renewables. And the cost and the balance with the other form of energy will be better understood. Personally, I think that nuclear should play, in a fully decarbonized world, should play at least 20-30% of a global electricity production. That's my guess. The rest being served by renewable or those fossil fuels that, you know, possibly are decarbonized as well for some reason.
For our investor interested in financial aspect, could you share your perspective how it is possible to gain exposure to this sector?
Well, first, like in every specialized sector, there should be a know-how of the sector and the technological understanding of the sector, which is, unfortunately, not very common in nuclear. Today, we have seen it's very straightforward to, for example, to understand that the cost of the uranium will go up because these modern reactors need more enrichment of uranium, even more material. Not all of the reactors are like ours. We are actually very unique in our approach of wanting to reuse the fuel many times. At the moment, we are very unique. So what I can see is that there are it's a difficult moment to invest, but also huge opportunities. It's a difficult moment because we are transitioning between an industry that has been governmental into an industry that will be private. This is something that we saw, for example, in the space industry. So this transition can be very successful, but we have to understand very well which are the companies and the technology that has the potential to be successful in this transition. That would be, but this aspect of understanding where is the good horse to bet on, that's it's a difficult part, I would say. And unfortunately, there are not all the technology will succeed, and not all the company will succeed. So it's a bit of a venture investment at the moment. I would say, for at least for what the what means the for what is the new reactor design.
You mentioned 2033. It is a quite long bet until we will start seeing the results.
Yes, but you know, I had a biotech before, and it took me 10 years from the moment I bought the IP of our first drug to deliver the drug, 10 years. So there are many, you know, the biotech industries like this since generation, but with the difference that if you fail a phase three, so the last phase of development of a drug, you lose all of the 100%. This is a well-known technology. So the risk is that you delay the achievement of your technology. But I would say there is no 100% risk like in biotech. So you have investors, and there will be a market, a private market for this kind of investment for sure. For example, we have chosen at a certain moment to enter into the public market because this is the way, for example, many biotech works. And I think that the impact of what we are doing is so important that we'll be having a lot of investors that that will be interested in taking part of the journey into this. And we can see this because I didn't mention, but we have more than 600 investors that already invested in the company. So we see the enthusiasm. Honestly, we never searched for investor in the first two rounds. There were so many people who wants to invest into nuclear. So I see a huge potential. The way it will be executed, you know, with caution and a lot of know-how and understanding of the technology, because otherwise one can be misled.
Correct. It is a good point. As we conclude, Stefano, our podcast has an educational objective. You hold tons of experience in the sector. We were wondering if you can give us tips on how listeners can gain knowledge to this interesting technology. I know that you have been a sponsor of a documentary, Nuclear Now, from Oliver Stone, the famous director. Can you recommend any other book, podcast, movie that you think would be good to read or watch?
Yes, I think that at the moment we have to... you don't have a huge reference. People has to start looking at this podcast like this one. And I think that watching Nuclear Now from Oliver Stone, it has been very useful to understand why people feared about nuclear and why they shouldn't fear anymore, should look forward, and why actually nuclear is going to be essential part to save the world, between brackets. We are actually even working on a second documentary because Oliver is so enthusiastic about promoting nuclear that he wants to give a better look at the future. So with the first documentary, we looked a little bit in the past, but now he wants to explore the potential of the next generation and what's happening, this transformation, etc. So that was a surprise for me that he wants to make a second one. I hope this can be an help in the future, but at the moment, one has to be very careful and start to read and follow the news on nuclear from different sources to have its own opinion. As I mentioned, that is very complex because the technology is well known. There are not many experts, so it's easy to be misled into.
You're definitely a very good ambassador. I've found many articles and videos from you and your team about this topic. So, Stefano, thank you for this super interesting discussion on the future of energy and how a small modular reactor can shape the future of low-carbon electricity. Your expertise has given us a lot of insight and the possibility ahead. Any final message you would like to leave with our listeners?
Well, as I'm talking to an investor community, I would suggest to really think about investing into nuclear. I'm doing as well. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm investing my own money into the company, into this It is very important. I am motivated first by the impact, and I think this technology can have a huge impact in the future for all the planet. So I'm very convinced about it. That's why I'm working so hard, even after a very successful exit from my first company.
Congratulations. This concludes our discussion on the intersection of nuclear and energy market. Stay tuned for more insightful discussion in the world of finance and innovation on the next episode of Glenmont's Insight. Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.